You're listening to a podcast from Blogging Heads TV.
Hi, Mickey.
Hey, Bob.
How you doing?
I'm doing okay.
Is that Nancy? Is that the Nancy doll?
This is the Nancy doll. She's back.
That's the small one, not the inflatable life-size one.
No, I keep that for special occasions.
But yeah, I know.
She's back, and I have a roundabout way of getting back to her. I'm always one for switching candidates in midstream. So during the Dukakis campaign at the very end, when he was obviously going to lose,
this is 1988. Right, for those of you who were
I
born.
Called on him to drop out of the race and let Lloyd Benson take over. So Biden is at a very low ebb now. If you were the stock market, you would say buy now, because you're supposed to buy at the moment of absolute abject terror when everything seems to be spiraling
down. So you think he should
step
aside and have the young and vibrant Nancy Pelosi take his place?
Looking at people in the chain of command, or the chain of succession, Bob, yeah. Pelosi is the next one who you would want in the Oval Office. Now, say she'd be fine for Biden quits. Somehow gets Kamala Harris to step aside, and Pelosi takes over, and Biden gets lauded for getting rid of Trump and doing these two or three things, and Pelosi gets saddled with the massive election loss in the midterms. Let her clean it up. She's retiring anyway. So I don't know. It makes a certain amount of sense. Probably completely insane, but
it's the nuttiest idea I've ever heard. I mean, look. Well, first of all, wait. How does this work?
Declare now,
is she
victory.
Number three in line?
It's the Aiken strategy.
Is she number three in the line of succession? Is she right after?
She's right Kamala? After Kamala. Yeah.
So wait, what exactly you're proposing? Is he designating her as someone who will take his place on the ticket? If so, why confine it to somebody who's in the line of succession?
No, I think. Well, here's the thing. I looked at his speech. He gave it a little talk. Urging people to take the vaccine, I came around to your point of view. Not that he's out of it, but he is completely incapable of persuading anybody at this point. At least in that speech, he was sleepwalking. He barely moved his face. He talked like this, and everybody should get the vaccine. Really, get the vaccine. I'm telling you, people, get the vaccine. And it was like, that's a basic function of his office, which he is unable to perform. So, not the 25th Amendment, but short of the 25th Amendment, maybe
24.5.
Jill could say, you know, I'd rather be with him in these waning years, and he would just step aside for health reasons and declare victory.
Well, right, but the big, I mean, first of all, if he's going to step aside and they're going to designate a replacement again, why confine it to the line of succession? Why not get somebody younger than like 95?
Because this is somebody to actually take over the office right now. This is not somebody to run for president.
So what do we do? Kidnap Kamala? How do we get her out of the picture?
That's a tougher one. But there must be some way to get her to take one for the team.
I'm not sure you've thought this through.
There's this minor scandal that I think is lurking in her.
Now you're talking. Let's hear it.
It's too minor. But
no such thing, Mickey. There's nothing is beneath our podcast. That's our whole brand.
No, nothing's beneath the paradroom. This podcast has.
Okay, so are we going to save that for the
paradroom?
I'll
save it in the paradroom, but this podcast.
Speaking of which, I got a great Parrot Room business model idea. I want to run by you once we talk about COVID, which we will get to. But it seems to me on this thing, I was thinking like, who'll tell Joe or who'll tell Jill? I mean, who is going to send the message that he needs to step aside? And you know who the candidate is? You know who the obvious person is?
Hillary. Now who?
Obama. Obama. Obama's the reason he's in the White House anyway, not only because he made him vice president,
Obama,
because he intervened at that crucial moment in the primaries.
But Obama intervened at the crucial moment in the primaries? I thought Clyburn intervened at the crucial moment of the primaries.
No, I think Obama made phone calls and swung the momentum. Obama may have even called Clyburn. I forget, but Obama was playing some
But keep in mind, it's Obama who screwed him over in 2016 because, you know, he might have beaten Trump. Hillary was a terrible candidate, and Obama anointed Hillary and pushed Biden aside. Biden That's does not true. Forget that, and he's not about to take advice from Obama to get out of the race.
Well, I mean, the two big questions are
Jimmy
who
Carter.
Tell Joe who
get Jimmy Carter to tell him to quit.
Now that's true. You know, Biden, he can say, you know, Joe, I know what it's like to feel like you're maybe in the twilight years.
I mean, Biden has reached the malaise speech stage of his presidency, and half the time it took Carter to get there. So that's some achievement. Might just reflect the filer faster thesis. Things are going faster these days. But I'm ready for the malaise speech. I like the malaise speech.
It didn't mention the word malaise, as we know.
I keep forgetting that. But as Rick Hertzberg points out, it got very good ratings. What?
And Rick wrote it. And Rick wrote it.
Oh, well, there you go.
Did he not?
I assume so.
I think
actually,
he did.
Yes.
I believe he
then
did.
But then when Carter asked for the cabinet's resignations the next day, his ratings went south. But the speech itself, I think, was a very Pat Caddell influenced speech. I think that's the conventional wisdom.
Could be.
Anyway.
Could be.
Anyway.
So
I don't know who would whisper to Biden, but
I am not joking when I say I think this is a really something people need to focus on. Joe Biden running for reelection is an excellent way to wind up with Trump as president, and we need to take that seriously.
Well, he's not going to run for
reelection. I personally think Kamala Harris running instead of Joe is a pretty good way to wind up with Trump as president. I personally think.
I agree, but I think another 4 years of Trump really would be a potential disaster. But
even me,
who voted for him twice,
even you say that, right? You say that. I'm surprised that you even.
As Aria Cohen,
I thought I would have to.
Aria Cohen Wade is trolling me by, which is the way everybody trolls me, by saying I voted for Trump twice. I have a.
You know why? You know why he does that?
Because he wants me to come on his podcast.
No, he wants you to just mention it. It's called Culturally Determined. Okay, he wants you to just mention it on our podcast, and it looks like he won this round, Mickey, because it did get mentioned.
One for Aria. It's hard. It's actually kind of hard at this point. Now that the Democrats' fortunes are at this low ebb, to think of somebody who would actually beat Trump. Bizarrely...
No, it's not.
Oh, who?
Almost anybody. I don't think. The low ratings.
Gavin Newsom.
Low ratings for Biden are low ratings for Biden. Okay.
I think that. Come up with somebody then. I think they're also low ratings
Chris
for
Murphy,
Kamala.
Chris Murphy. Chris Murphy. Just like pick a white guy.
There's a soundbite.
What I mean is, I think that a Democratic vulnerability is being seen as, look, no, Cory Booker. Cory Booker,
Cory
whom
Booker.
I don't really approve of on foreign policy, but hey.
Cory Booker's a good one. I was reading this Ryan Lizza interview with Steve Clemens, which is actually, who's sort of become a Washington sort of, he's sort of half party giver, half Bob Strauss. He runs around meeting people and arranging panels and also fixes things up in the meantime. So
he's a fascinating guy. He knows Biden pretty well, by the way. Steve,
yeah, and he knows Steve, he apparently knows Manchin, and he was recounting how Manchin negotiated with Stacey Abrams this sort of watered down election voting rights bill that he could go along with, and he and Stacey Abrams seem to have behaved very responsibly, as and Clemens too. They were trying to come up with something. And, you know, everybody mocked Stacey Abrams because, you know, she had lost the race for governor of Georgia and was saying, I should be president. You should really consider me to be president. You know what everybody said? Yeah, Stacey. But actually, she's one of the better Democratic candidates, it turns out, because
I agree.
She's really smart. And B, she was smart enough not to show up when Biden came to her state. So that means she really wants to be governor because Biden isn't that popular in Georgia. The only problem is on the stump, she does not show how smart she is. On the stump, she gives standard Democratic talking points. If you get her off that, she's brilliant. So, the joke will be that the woman everybody ridiculed was in fact the best candidate for the job.
She's a much better candidate than Kamala. Now, is this scenario that she becomes governor this year and then has that on her resume in 2 years? Stacey Abrams?
Is she? That's, I hadn't thought of this scenario. I just thought of the irony that she would be good. It'd be good if she dropped everything now and ran. I don't know. My other hope on the
Republican. Yeah, but it's a pretty thin looking resume if she hasn't been governor.
My other. Yeah, I agree. My other hope is that Trump and DeSantis are now feuding sort of openly. You know, Trump dissed DeSantis on the vax. DeSantis said he should have spoken up more forcefully when Trump wanted to lock things down. He didn't want to lock things down, but when his government wanted to lock things down. So they're feuding. DeSantis should just run right at him. What the hell? What's DeSantis got to lose? It's not like Trump is going to destroy DeSantis for all time. Suppose Trump beats DeSantis 50-24%. It's a good showing for DeSantis. Yeah. It stands him in good stead next time if Trump loses. So just go for it. Don't it's not a suicide mission, I don't think, for him. He's so strong.
Well, you don't think it would sabotage his chances like 6 years down the road to run for president?
I'm thinking no. It depends well, how crazy the MAGA base is, and do they have long memories, and do they have total loyalty to Trump, and how big they are. And I'm not sure they're that big.
Mm-hmm.
We
got to do something about the Biden Kamala problem. Both of those are a path to 4 years of Trump. I personally think
if Biden doesn't run
eight years, right? He could. How does the amendment read? Can a guy just not serve, or a person just not serve two consecutive terms? Or
can't be elected for two terms. So you can't.
Oh, then it would just be four more years.
You don't have to be consecutive. So
but wait, hey, you can be elected, this is genius.
You could be elected.
Wait a second.
Obama could be elected vice president, and then the president could resign, and Obama would become president for a third term. That can happen.
Listen to this idea. This is brilliant. It just occurred to me. Trump says he was elected last November. Well, that's two. You're done.
He's been serving.
You've been elected twice. I should be on the Supreme Court.
It's a good joke. You know, there's this guy named James Boyd, a brilliant Senate staffer who wrote the Ritual of Wiggle, which is how to respond to a scandal, admit what is known, deny what is unknown, and cry. That's one of the rules. And the other rule that I remember is, at the moment of deepest, darkest disgrace, announce for re-election. So we are now at that moment, not disgrace, but despair for Biden. But he may announce for re-election. He's not going to run for re-election. So Kamala is then. Kamala is then just a candidate and she'll be beaten. I don't worry about Kamala. Being, you know, if Biden doesn't run, Kamala actually being nominated in 2024.
Wait. Say that again. First of all, did you just say Biden is not going to run in 2 years?
I don't think Biden's going to run in 2 years. He has to pretend that he is, but he's not going to.
What's the scenario? No.
Says, I'm really old and I'd like to pass the torch to a new generation. I mean, it's obvious.
One thing about males in particular in our species is they never throw in the towel. I mean, they just want to maintain whatever power they have forever.
I mean, are they going to go with the, is rigor?
Not only males. I mean, look at Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Will rigor mortis have been set in by? I mean, will he speak from a completely emotional state? I declare her re-election. I mean, he's losing motor powers.
Mickey, could you do that again? No, that was really good.
No. The obvious question is, what is he thinking with this strategy of moving from defeat to defeat? He loses Big Mac Better, Build Back Better, and then he moves on to a doomed assault on voting rights.
That's already fallen. That's done.
It's done? No, it hasn't done. It's not done.
No, I mean, it's toast. It's not going to happen, right? There's no
way. They're not voting until next week, so it's not. Most people think,
but he's not going to get filibuster reform.
Most people think he's not going to get filibuster reform, so it's toast. Yes, and I agree with him. But who is in charge? Is there any strategy behind this at all? It would be good if the White House opened up and showed us there was some strategy, even if a even if it was a stupid strategy. I compare it to the famous South Park episode where he's mocking how the sitcom, they're mocking how the sitcom Family Guy is written. And it's actually at 20th Century Fox, there's a big pool and manatees are swimming across the pool pushing idea balls. And when the two ideas collide, that's their joke. The punchline and the setup joke. So is Biden's strategy like concocted by manatees swimming in a pool and pushing balls? Who is deciding this? Okay, and the only way it makes sense to me is, it's a gift to the Democratic id. In other words, when we allowed Saddam to be executed in Iraq, it was billed as a gift to the Iraqi id. The anti-Saddam forces demanded that he be executed. So that was like, and this is the progressive demand that they have this vote. Okay. And once they're satisfied, right, once their id has been placated, then they'll come around and go for Joe Manchin's watered down Build Back Better bill, and Biden will have a victory. That's the only way it makes sense. And it still does make some sort of sense in that sense. But
I think Biden saying he's trying to get it makes sense in political terms. He's just got to show his base. He made the effort. He can't not show his base. He made the effort.
Hasn't he showed them? My God. He has to actually. I mean, keep in mind, he's forcing these senators to make a vote they'd rather not take. Okay.
On the filibuster, you mean?
On all these things. I mean, said they'd rather not. Maybe not with voting rights. Maybe they'd rather vote. That's a good point. The conventional wisdom is he's forcing them to walk the plank. But why isn't this a plank that Democrats want to walk? Good question.
So listen, your mention of manatees reminds me that I should encourage people to read my review of Don't Look Up on the Non-Zero Substack newsletter. I got to say, I was kind of happy with it.
Does it involve,
have you
manatees?
Seen Don't Look Up? It does. It involves, there's a celebrity who is, who says she's donating she's played by Ariana Grande, and she says she's donating some of the proceeds of some song to a manatee reserve or manatee sanctuary. A lot of people are satirized, including celebrities who, you know, are kind of flaunt their political.
Manatee sanctuary is actually a good idea. They get killed by power boats.
Well, there you go. Now, COVID. We should talk about COVID because I think first of all, the transition here is, look, Biden looks like he's in trouble now, but I do think should the pandemic magically disappear, which isn't completely out of the question, he'll be in a different world. I still think a lot of this is pandemic fatigue.
This is the buy on the dip theory. I mean, Biden is as low as he's going to go. If he were the stock market, this is where you'd want to buy.
I would definitely
the Omicron, as
I
would
recommend that people definitely buy him on the betting markets, if only so that you can sell him months. He can't get lower. Right.
The Omicron virus, it may recede quickly. There's a good article by David Wallace Wells on is it as deadly or is it really milder? But it doesn't really matter that much if it goes away politically, if it goes away. Although what does it leave in its wake? Does it leave the Delta? I don't know. Second, inflation is high, but it's less this month than last month. Third,
it is. I mean, it just reached the highest, you know, official annual rate at the end of December.
Right, but in the monthly rate, this month was lower. I mean, the statistics always, it was a case for the press to beat the drums of inflation. But if you actually looked at the statistics, it was slightly ambiguous. I think.
Yeah, but meanwhile, China's doing big time lockdown now, and that's going to throw another kink into the whole thing, but go ahead. I mean, everything that caused the inflation in the first place is recurring as a result of Omicron, including people shifting money from services to products to goods.
But
and
they're
so
shifting,
on.
But they're going to shift back to services, Bob, and that's going to save us. They're going to start buying subscriptions to the Parrot Room, and inflation will lower. I mean, the CNN announced that CNN's viewership has fallen like by 80%. They're now down to 549,000 people. We are rivaling. We're getting there. I mean,
the reason
within shouting
CNN
distance of CNN, it's you versus CNN in a death match for the audience.
That's not the end of it. The reason CNN is falling is everyone's going to the Parrot Room.
Yeah, right.
Where do you think they're going? You think they're going to Fox? They're not going to Fox. They're going to the Pear Room. Okay, so I got to mention my great idea, okay? This is, we're sticking with COVID. My business model wrinkle is related to COVID. Okay,
I had two more points in the Biden comeback. One is, he pivots on immigration. Comeback. He's just fired the hardliners. The hardliners have left.
The next one is child tax credit, I'm leaving.
No, the next one is the Supreme Court overturns Roe versus Wade and abortion becomes an issue. Anyway.
That's actually a good point.
Anyway, go ahead with your thing. Those are the four planks of the Biden comeback strategy.
So I was thinking Omicron is going to pass so fast that I should just kind of sit it out. Like zero human contact, right? Because I can get my daily exercise, either jogging or biking, or if it's too cold, do a stationary bike in my home. But then I got kind of stir crazy. I mean, for one thing, you know, well, I won't go into too much detail. It's easier on my body if every once in a while I swim instead of doing one of those things.
No kidding.
And so I thought, what the hell? And I also thought, like, wait, maybe it would be good to get Omicron because it might be good to upgrade your immune system. Did you read this Wall Street Journal piece about, I mean, it's probably crazy. I don't know who these people are, but it was an anti-masking piece. And the argument was that, like, every once in a while, you need to upgrade your immune system. So there's mutation A, B, C in the virus, and your initial immunity that you got either through vaccine or through the illness itself is still good, but then it gets then after three more mutations you're totally out of the picture, and everybody is, and so this is their argument that, you know, every once in a while you got to let the virus rip or something. Anyway,
there've been 100 takes on why you should not go out and get Omicron, and they're pretty convincing.
Well, I wish you'd told me that a couple of days ago. Anyway, so I wasn't trying to get it. Okay. But I thought I could use a swim. I went to the health club. I had to go to the pharmacy to pick up, a prescription, and on impulse, I went to a Dunkin' Donuts. That was arguably not essential, but so now 2 days later, I feel kind of bad. And here's the idea. Okay. See what you think of this. Now the Parrot Room. People know patreon.com/parrot room. That's our, you know, little paywall thing. So here's what I do, Mickey. Right before we tape the Parrot Room, I take the test. I stick the things up my nose. You don't get to see that in the Parrot Room. That's like a $100 tier thing, and there is no $100 tier. But at the beginning of the Parrot Room, we actually do the reveal. Like, we look at the test results, and I will be seeing them for the first time, too. It's like a gender reveal party where the pregnant mother is... Right? It's the same idea.
It's a great idea.
There could be really bad news in this case.
But I want to see some symptoms first. I'm not seeing any symptoms.
You want me to describe them? Well, Omicron is famously inconsequential.
Well, but there's no drama if there's no symptoms. I want to...
Well, okay, here are the symptoms. Last night, I felt really weirdly tired. So I slept. I slept separately. I didn't sleep with my wife or dogs. I don't want to give any of them COVID. I woke up with the sore throat. It was a little bit of a weird, there is just the sore throat you get from the dryness of the forced air heat in the winter. Right. So you have to be careful. You just get dry throat. This felt a little deeper, and I've had these, I don't know, slightly headachy. It's, you know, frankly, this is a cheap publicity stunt, but there's enough possibility of this that I am willing to expend a rapid test.
Exactly the same, the same symptoms, and I thought I had COVID, and I spent $90 for a rapid test. Ugh. And of course I was negative.
I hope we're not paying that much.
This was a while ago. Jesus. And I needed it like right now. And it was a drive through thing, and it was a total ripoff. But anyway, I still think it's a good publicity stunt, but you should...
No, we're going to do it. We're going to do it.
You should sniffle a bit.
I'm rubbing my nose. That's because it's itchy. I'm not kidding. There are little things. This is not just a publicity stunt, folks.
They're awful little. Okay.
COVID is not, Omicron's not as dramatic. A friend of mine got it. It's just not as dramatic as the other thing. The concern is whether, you know, you still get can get long COVID.
Right. That was one of the key points. You could also still transmit it to like other people.
Well, I'm aware of that.
So
yeah. That's kind of putting it mildly with Omicron. You can transmit it, yes.
The whole herd immunity thing is just like gone totally out the window, right?
What, you mean nobody's saying it? I thought it made a comeback. In fact, I'm worried that people are going to, because Omicron seems milder, that's going to give support to the kind of herd immunity, let her rip folks. And I think one thing we should remember is one of the main reasons I think Omicron seems so mild is because so many people are vaccinated or have had the illness. And so they're much less likely to be hospitalized.
But we thought we were going to get herd immunity with Delta, and then Omicron came along, and it's a variant that it reinfects the already infected. So the vaccinated. So there goes herd immunity.
Oh, I see what you mean.
So we'll get some new strain will come along that will infect people who've already been vaccinated against Omicron. So
remember, a very strange thing seems to have happened. The other variants had been incremental upgrades, and for whatever reason, Omicron was dramatic. Some people think it evolved in a single immune compromised person, whatever, but that's not a very typical development, as I understand it. I have kind of a headache right now, Mickey, and I'm not just trying to get people to fork over money for the Parrot Room. You know, I would not stoop so low, but my head, you know. I'm just saying. Okay, so what about...
Go ahead.
We heard about Djokovic, right? Like now he lost the last round of appeal. He made the things... The Australian Open starts in 2 days, and it looks like tomorrow he has to head back to his hotel for confinement while his lawyers try a desperate appeal of this latest ruling.
For some reason, I don't care about Djokovic. It's like Prince Andrew in the Epstein scandal. I don't care about Prince Andrew. He's a wastrel royal, and the hell with him. I care about, you know, is George Mitchell implicated? That would be important. So I just don't care about Djokovic. I'm sorry. If it was
Roger,
I would care.
You really took the wind out of my sails. Well, then what about Boris Johnson?
I don't quite understand Boris Johnson. He seems to be a party guy. He likes to give parties that violate the COVID standards. That he's. I still don't understand quite why he's in trouble. The best explanation, at least the most plausible one I've heard, comes from Ryan Jurdusky, which is it's not the parties, it's that he's completely failed to stop immigration. He's failed on a policy level, and he hasn't done what he sort of promised the voters the benefits of Brexit would be. So there's a little souring on Brexit, too, of course.
I actually am not keeping track of that. What's the basis for the souring? Britain's not doing that bad economically or anything, are they?
I think they think they could do better. And I forget what the basis for the souring was. But probably, you know, individual businesses are hurt. People can't, you know, because they were based on exports to Europe. I don't know, the free trade benefits that Johnson predicted haven't materialized, something like that. I don't know.
But they're saying he may actually be toast, right? For going to this, for it being revealed that he went to some party.
I guess, I think he gave the party. It's not exactly the Profumo scandal, but yes.
Well, no, I think did he give it? This is the party that was back in 2020 and they just got this... email was disclosed about it or something? Or was...
I didn't figure that out. Party. I didn't figure that out.
There was a party in the spring of 2020. An email surfaced. And one reason that matters is because at that point, the government was issuing these very strict regulations. And it turned out the government was having... You know, they were saying even outdoors, you must remain 6 feet away. And these guys were meanwhile hobnobbing.
I thought it was another more recent party, which would be even more insane, but...
No, I think that's the problem.
On the other hand, they're getting through COVID better than we are, so I don't understand why people are so upset.
Well, what's hopeful for us is, you know, their Omicron started about a week to 10 days before ours. They seem to their case numbers seem to have been declining for a full week now. Last couple of days, ours seem to be flattening. Now, of course, Britain's a different country, higher vax rate, smaller population, who knows, but the Omicron thing, everyone is, it's looking like It's going to crest soon. I'm telling you, Mickey, I think I may actually be sick.
You need a little more evidence before you could say it's flattening. I think it's if you squint at the graph, it seems to be flattening.
It's like 3 or 4 days. It's like three or four days in the U.S. But Britain has clearly been headed down.
There's the David Wallace Wells point that deaths are actually rising, and we may not have the disconnect between deaths and infections to the same degree that England has it. So it's possible that once again we will be different than England.
There's also a weird hospitalization discrepancy. Our hospitalization numbers have been going up during Omicron. Britain's never really went up much. Could be a difference in the way the stats are kept.
And so many of our hospitalizations are hospitalizations for other reasons. I mean, that's what's... Well, I was shocked.
Somebody needs
to
get to the bottom of that. Somebody needs to get to the bottom of that. One thing I want to talk about in the Parrot Room is talk some more about this Robert Malone appearance on Joe Rogan, because for one thing, that has stirred up various other things. Decoding the Gurus podcast just did an episode on it. A bunch of doctors wrote Spotify trying to get Rogan canceled, I guess. Yeah. But we can talk about that.
You know, people hate it when you talk, when you tease the Parrot Room.
Who hates it?
People. People who have given me feedback.
Well, are they in the Parrot Room? Are they paying for the Parrot Room? These people?
I think so. But they're watching this and they're annoyed in this podcast that we're promoting the Parrot Room. I'm just saying. They also complain.
Name these people.
They also complain.
Hey, I got a great idea. Will you name the people in the Parrot Room?
They also complained about my name dropping. So,
folks,
Mickey
is going to name these people in the Parrot Room.
So I can't drop their names either.
Right after we find out how long I have left.
We still have to talk about January 6th and the Supreme Court decision on the vaccines.
So
January 6th. I think I have something to say about those.
Okay, so seditious conspiracy is the charge that was filed against the head of the Oath Keepers, right?
Right, and as it's weird. The most clarifying thing I've read recently, bizarrely, was an article by Sidney Blumenthal in the Guardian.
Sidney Blumenthal, you mean?
Yeah, and who's like a Hillary Clinton person and is known for his conspiratorial bend of mind, but I don't think he's known for bullshit. I mean, he tends to try to get it right. And his point is that we conflate the insurrection and the coup, okay? The coup was Bannon's plan for the triple bank shot Green Bay Packers sweep, where we delay things and, the states reconsider their electoral slates and Pence doesn't give the okay. So it's all thrown into this no man's land and eventually maybe the Trump electors prevail. The insurrection was the actual riot or riot plus whatever it was at the Capitol. Okay, and the two things are different. And the riot it's taken as itself was sort of a joke. I mean, the Oath Keepers, as Byron York points out, were riding around in golf carts. They were unarmed. They were like sending each other macho texts. They weren't even first into the building. They really didn't do...
You're talking about the Oath Keepers?
The Oath Keepers, the guys that were indicted. They really didn't do much of anything. But as Dave Weigel pointed out, if you see it as a delaying tactic that delays things so that the Bannon's Green Bay Packers sweep can take effect, then it really does meld with the coup into one conspiracy to change who's the head of government.
Wait, how was that going to work? Were the Oath Keepers, how did they delay it? And what
they delay it by chasing Pence away and disrupting the session of Congress so they have to postpone it. That's how you would delay things. If you killed Pence, that would delay it even more. But
which Trump seems to have tried to accomplish with the tweet.
But, you know, it's not inconceivable that they thought they were going to delay it.
The Proud Boys are kind of these cosplay guys, if that's the way you pronounce it. I mean, they were dressed up, you know, they all were wearing army, you know, combat gear. And, did they have a weapon stash in some motel in Virginia or something?
The Oath Keepers.
Oh, I meant the Oath Keepers. I'm sorry. I meant that. The Oath Keepers are the cosplay guys. They dress up.
Yeah,
store weapons.
Right.
They're waiting for Trump to declare martial law. Like, as if he needs them if he's going to declare martial law, right? But meanwhile, the Proud Boys did the actual business.
That is my impression. The Proud Boys, keep in mind that the official Proud Boys decided not to attend this, okay? So these are like rump Proud Boys who went on their own, okay? And there was a very good video with the Washington Post of them, and they said they were going to take the Capitol. So they clearly had a plan, and they were clearly violent at the place where they met the police, the barricade. They very quickly batted down the police violently, and then it looked peaceful after that once the police had retreated. But there weren't that many of them, and they weren't in formation, and they weren't wearing anything special.
Okay, but wait. I think now the leader of the Proud Boys was not there, but I think that's because when he tried to come to Washington, he was in some kind of legal jeopardy, and he had to leave or something, right?
But I think. I'm pretty sure that they, you know, McGinnis said that they had decided not to attend.
If you think the guys around the Proud Boys around the Capitol, who were non-trivial in number and consequence, were there in defiance of their leadership, I think that's extremely naive. I think the leadership wanted plausible deniability.
What they said before Charlottesville, which is, we are not going to this. If you guys want to go on your own, you're on your own. But
I don't.
The key is, do they wear their trademark Fred Perry shirts? And the answer is they didn't.
No, they didn't dress up. I think the leadership said that they knew where the FBI microphone was, and they said that into the microphone, like, "Hey, we don't want you guys to go, okay?" Yeah. And then they're giving hand signals. Come on, give me a break.
You don't think they wanted to be part of this action? There were 40 in the video that I saw.
They were totally consequential. There was an excellent Wall Street Journal video done almost a year ago where
That's the one I'm talking about.
Yeah, okay. It was Wall Street Journal. The highest ranking Proud Boy there whispers, says something in confidence to some guy who's technically not a Proud Boy. That guy walks up to the cops, and that is the first breaching, I believe, of a barricade. He starts messing with the cop, starts a ruckus, and so on. Then there are also these videos. I think the first window broken was broken by a Proud Boy.
I could see that the Proud Boys that are there might have been violent. I don't think there were hundreds and hundreds of them. I think there were 50 of them.
No, there weren't. There were only about 15. But the point is, I have heard some reporter who actually kept track of this saying, it's possible that if the Proud Boys hadn't been there, none of this would have happened. And I think
If you look at that video,
right.
That's
plausible. That's my point. If they were the difference between January 6th
there are many, many people in the Proud Boys, and 15 of them show up and are violent. That doesn't seem to indicate that the leadership said, okay, you can go. There's a tiny fraction went, and they were the most violent faction, not surprisingly.
I think it was a very smart move by them to maintain
It was also a smart move. Anyway, the point is, even if in the Weigel theory, the delay of the insurrection served the purposes of the larger Bannon coup, It was crazy to think that the insurrection itself was going to topple the government. But if it delayed things for the Bannon coup, maybe it conceivably might have. It's not clear that the Oath Keepers knew that. They didn't really know the Bannon coup was going on. So if you're going to charge them with wanting to overthrow the government, you sort of got to prove that they knew about that. And I sort of believe that Bannon knew that there might be violence and it might help his strategy. But there's no evidence, as far as I can see, that Trump knew. Unless we get that phone call between Trump and Bannon. So it was interesting to separate the two and show how they'd work together, but you also got to show that the various parties knew that they were going to work together. And the only guy you can make that charge of sort of completely plausibly is Bannon. And it's not even clear that he knew. He had thought through that we have this riot and the riot delays things and that helps the Green Bay sweep. I mean, all his efforts seem to be to get Pence to delay things.
Well, yeah, until midnight the night before, that was their hope. And, remember, they were trying to get Pence to let Rudy Giuliani visit him at midnight or something at his house and talk him into it. But look, Bannon is smart enough both to have known that stuff could get out of control at the Capitol. He was certainly sending signals that could have that effect. And he's also smart enough not to have made the signals explicit. But I doubt they've got anything on him legally in that regard.
But the more important thing is Trump. Is do they have anything on Trump legally? And I was reading what I think is the statute for sedition.
Seditious conspiracy is the charge.
Yeah, but that's the charge. But the Oath Keeper. This is either the statute for sedition or for insurrection. And it said one of the grounds was, if you incite, an attempt to take over the government, or you set on foot, attempt to overthrow the government. Now, set on foot is interesting because it doesn't seem to require incitement. You just set it on foot, and it doesn't require follow through. You just set it on foot and walk away. And that conceivably, that's the closest thing to anything you could charge Trump with. He set it on foot. So I'm not ruling it out. And it may have been an outdated version of the statute because you don't really see phrases like set on foot in modern day language. But, other than that, the attempts to nail Trump, they're going to have more evidence than they have now.
No, I think they will. I think they do. And I doubt they ever will. But I am reminded of that moment in the debate where Joe Biden said, "Will you tell the Proud Boys to stand down?" And Trump said, "Proud Boys, stand back and stand by." And stand by means await further instructions. That's what it means in the military and anywhere else, pretty much. I leave aside what he meant. Although it was a very quick, spontaneous formulation that is interesting in structure. But what I think is that both the Oath Keepers and at least those Proud Boys who showed up, I think they took him seriously. Maybe they would have been there anyway, done what they did anyway. But I got to think that reinforced their sense that, okay, this is the moment. Certainly the Oath Keepers were literally waiting for a signal from him.
But
on
if you read their text, text messages, they get pissed at Trump. They say Trump has wimped out. He's betrayed us.
Yeah, because they wanted the signal. Right. They thought he was going to say, okay, you've been standing by.
Or
now
they
move.
Thought he was going to get Pence to flip or something. Or they thought he had a plan.
Right.
I guess Trump would like the idea that he has these militias at his beck and call. Pretty pathetic since the militias aren't very big. I mean, how is people are talking about a civil war. If there's a civil war against the Oath Keepers and their golf carts, it's not going to be a very long civil war. It's going to be like Tom Lehrer's version of nuclear war. So long, Mom. I'm off to drop the bomb. So don't wait up for me.
Well, things can get ugly, but they won't. I don't think they'll get ugly in the sense of huge armies massing against one another.
Or even small armies massing against. They'll roll it up, in a day if they want.
Well, no, but there could be a kind of insurgency. I mean, it's.
And I think if Trump had won, there wouldn't have been an insurgency, but there would have been resistance bombings and terrorism and things like that. I mean, people wouldn't have taken that lightly.
Maybe a little, but the thing about Team Blue is they don't have many guns. So what you were going to talk about?
They don't have any guns now, but they have been known to have bombs. But I agree, Team Red has more guns. I was going to talk about the Supreme Court's decision to declare Biden's vaccine mandate unconstitutional, and it does seem to me that. We have this administrative state, which is excrescence on the Constitution. Laws are supposed to be passed by Congress. Instead, Congress delegates to an agency the ability to make laws. And so the whole field of administrative law is designed to, how the fuck can we control this? This is you know, not right. what the Constitution says. And if there is a case for delegating power to the executive, it is when there's an emergency, that's a health emergency, you need quick action. And so that's not the time when the Supreme Court should bend over backwards to say, no, this delegation of power was unconstitutional. Plus, there is a credible delegation of power there. You know, they can clearly, if there's a disease in the workplace, the OSHA can intervene, which is what happened here. And this was a disease that was in the workplace. It just it was everywhere else also. But why, in this case, light on this distinction? Was it a workplace disease or was it a general disease? You know, lawyers are going to make millions of dollars in the future saying, is it a workplace disease or a general disease? I mean, it was a stupid decision.
You're saying they should have supported Biden's mandate?
Yeah. I mean, OSHA exists to protect health in the workplace. They were acting to protect health in the workplace. It happened to have repercussions elsewhere. Who cares? You know, it got Biden off the hook because it was going to be a recipe for disaster. And it was unwise. I don't think it was a wise thing to do because there'd be so much resistance. But it's not the Supreme Court's job to say whether it was wise or not. Okay, it's the Supreme Court's job to say whether they had the power to do it. And they had the power to do it, I think.
Well, that's a good take I wouldn't have expected from you. And, you know, makes sense to me. I think the Supreme Court, you know, has obviously always been, well, during my lifetime, has seemed to be somewhat sensitive to political currents. And I think it could be a couple of things. It could be that they felt like they're on Team Red and Team Red wanted the mandate vetoed or whatever the term is, invalidated. It could be that they think of it as wise, like the country can't stand the friction that will ensue if this mandate goes forward.
Usually I think that's true. In this case, this ran headlong into a whole machinery of administrative law that the Federalist Society has cooked up. There's the major questions doctrine, which says if it's a major question, Congress has to explicitly give authority to the agency. Gorsuch wrote a concurrence where he said, even if they explicitly give power to the agency, it is unconstitutional because Congress can't delegate its power. And in general, I agree, Congress shouldn't be able to outsource its power. It could say, you know, the staff of Blogging Heads shall make all the laws. Can't do that. Congress has to make the laws. So, but it ran headlong into that, and you're not going to get Justice Kavanaugh to abandon the major questions doctrine because that he's devoted his life's work to establishing the major questions doctrine. So they were going to do that. Now they might have said, but we do find a specific delegation here. They could have said that. I agree. I agree that they pay attention to politics and politics is in play at the margins, especially Roberts, who, you know, they said it was okay for the government to mandate a vaccine among federal health workers. So Roberts realizes it would be too much if they said the federal government couldn't do that. So he went over to the other side along with Kavanaugh on that one. But I tend to think that there was a lot of internal right-wing legal doctrine at play here.
They did give Biden a win on a smaller vaccine.
That's the
smallest.
That's the federal. The federal.
That's the
healthcare workforce. Yeah.
Okay. So on the international front,
right?
One thing is, I think for the first time now, in the wake of the kind of failed summit between Russia and the United States. I guess it's not a summit if the leaders aren't there, but whatever. That for the first time, it seems like the consensus now is Russia is going to invade Ukraine.
Huh. But Bob, we're going to make a strong showing in the United Nations against them.
Well, no. What we've told them we're going to do is sanction the hell out of them, plus arm the insurrection, I think. It is. More and more people are talking as if it's for real. They're predicting mid-late February.
I mean, if Russia invades Ukraine, they grab eastern Ukraine, which is more sympathetic, and then as they get closer
More Russian speaking.
Right. As they get closer and closer to the non-Russian parts, they start getting shot in the back by these guerrillas. And at some point they stop and say, you know, okay, we're taking this much of Ukraine. We're not taking the whole thing. Why is that such a horrible outcome?
Well, I think, first of all, they don't have any intention of taking the whole thing. I don't think there's any way they send troops into Kiev. They could do some kind of bombing to just mess with their heads or something. But I haven't heard anybody say they think Russia's going to put troops in Kiev. There's some river that everybody thinks they won't cross. Okay. I don't remember the name of the river. You know, in terms of what's so bad about it, to somebody like me, you know, I really would like to establish the norm that international law is respected and countries don't invade. I agree that there's no, in terms of actual American interests or even the interests of our NATO allies. Yeah, I don't think there's any big security threat posed by it. It's bad. It's unfortunate. I mean, look, it didn't have to happen. I think for starters, if George Bush hadn't in 2008, against the wishes of the Europeans, if he hadn't twisted their arms and gotten them to agree on this declaration that we plan to admit Ukraine and Georgia into NATO, I don't think this would in all probability be happening. I don't think NATO should have been expanded at all. I don't think we should have fiddled with Ukraine's election the way Victoria Nuland did.
This is George W. Bush.
But what did I say?
No, I just want to make sure clear that
it is. It's 2008. Yeah. It's late in his administration.
Because I thought no, George H.W. Bush went too far, even though he was trying not to, you know, in terms of rubbing the Soviet.
No, I
Russia's
mean,
nose
most
at
of
it.
The going, most of the going too far started in the Clinton administration. I mean, in my ideal world, after the Cold War, we would have said, well, maybe we can actually now finally build a world where nations respect the rule of law, we take the UN seriously. Well, George H.W. Bush came reasonably close to doing that. I mean, the Persian Gulf War had UN backing. It was a legal war. It's true that he kind of invaded Panama, I mean, snatched his leader, which was a violation of international law. But I mean, in terms of the confrontation with Russia, I think the real trouble starts in the Clinton administration, the decision to expand NATO, even the bombing of Kosovo. By the way, the other Bosnian intervention was a UN authorized thing. That was fine early in the Clinton administration. But the Kosovo bombing late was not. George W. Bush violated international law left and right, invading, you know, and stuff. And then fatefully did this 2008 declaration. And here we are.
But I mean, if suppose they stop at this river, okay, Ukraine has its independence. It's just a smaller Ukraine, but it's not like.
Yeah,
you know, they can elect a president, and we don't have to. You know, they're, as you seem to concede, they're turning their attention to the West more than to the East now, and so we got an independent Ukraine that's focused more on the West, and Putin gets his Russian speaking Eastern Ukraine. Why is that just a terrible equilibrium? It seems like a good equilibrium.
As a matter of equilibrium, it's not terrible. As I said, I don't think U.S. interests are particularly at stake in that sense, except that we have an interest in having a law-abiding world, and we're in no position to complain about other lawbreakers because we do it all the time. We're violating international law right now with troops in Syria, and I could name a lot of other things. And we invaded Iraq, and that was illegal, and so on. So we're in no position to really complain. I just wish all of this would stop.
But I'm not willing to go to war to preserve a law-abiding world.
Oh, I'm not advocating war. Yeah. I'm not advocating anything like
so
that.
Are you against sanctions?
In this case, not so much. I'm against these sanctions that supposedly are to help the people and wind up hurting them, as in Syria and Afghanistan and Venezuela and in Cuba. I'm against the sanctions in Iran. But when a country does violate international law, it doesn't bother me.
I was reading an article by Walter Russell Mead, and it was actually against sanctions in Southeast Asia, which I didn't realize that a lot of a lot of our allies in Southeast Asia didn't qualify to go to the Summit of Democracies because we don't consider them a democracy. Some of them we had sanctioned, like Myanmar. I think even Singapore was not invited to the Summit of the Democracy, which is pretty unbelievable. Mead argues that there are three goals of our foreign policy that they conflict, and we have done a bad job of saying which we are for, which is the priority. Mm-hmm. There's containing China. There's promoting democracy and human rights, number two. And number three is climate change, stopping climate change. And his argument, if we really want to contain China, we really have to cozy up to a bunch of people we don't consider democracies, like Myanmar and India. You know, there are problems with India too, but we have to have India on our side if you're going to. And so his argument is that we're just incoherently trying to balance all three, and it's not clear to the world that we're achieving any of them. You scoffed at this.
Well, it's true that our policy is incoherent. I mean, so his argument is that in order to contain China's just expansion, like Taiwan or whatever he considers expansion, we have to sacrifice democratic principles in terms of who our allies are.
It's like a reversion, I guess, to more of a Cold War posture where we
were allies with a bunch of
dictatorships and we didn't make a big fuss about it because it was more important to contain Russia. So yes,
his basic argument is
we should just decide: are we going to contain China? Or are we not going to contain China? But go ahead.
Yeah, and so he's saying give up on democracy promotion.
Well, and stop these little petty, these little sort of small bore sanctions to just piss people off, who we want on our side.
Like Myanmar. He's talking about like Myanmar.
Singapore. I don't know what the list is. Are there sanctions on Malaysia?
I think your Cold War analogy is good. I mean, we in the name of a global fight on behalf of liberty, we cozied up and empowered a bunch of repressive creeps.
I'm sympathetic to that. So why what's so terrible about that? Because China does not pose any threat?
Well, I think it doesn't pose any threat to our vital interests, no. I definitely think that. There are real flashpoints. I'd rather they not take over Taiwan, but does that have to be a threat to America's self-interest? Well, the short answer is not if we hurry up and increase our own microchip making capabilities.
The threat would be that they've devised an Orwellian techno state unlike anything the world has ever seen, and if it turns out to be really productive and spread, that's really bad for humanity.
Well, I don't think it will be productive. I mean, if that's our fear, we should get our shit together and try to make our own country work. But you know, that reminds
me.
That
means more immigration,
story.
Bob. That's a bad idea. Go ahead.
I'm going to head you off at that pass. So we're almost at an hour, but let me say there was a story this week that's relevant to that. One of the fears about China is, well, it'll give its repressive software technology to these countries and slowly encircle America in high-tech authoritarian regimes, with whatever. This week, a bunch of journalists at a magazine or some outlet in El Salvador discovered that for close to a year, all of them, everything they've done with their smartphones, every picture they've taken, every conversation they've had, all of it has been monitored apparently by the El Salvador government. We don't know for sure. And El Salvador got the software from Israel. It's this Pegasus software, right? I mean, it's like, if you're serious about this as a problem, have a talk, with Israel. Now, we had one talk. I think some pressure was put on Israel. And as a result, I think the company that produces this Pegasus software said, well, we're going to confine it to, I don't know, governments and not give it to anybody else. Well, the El Salvador government, I'm not even sure about that. But anyway, this is just an example of how, China doesn't have some kind of monopoly on repressive software. if we're serious about that as a problem, we need to talk to some of our allies and not just China. And we're going to need to restrict our own software exports maybe more effectively than we are. But that's kind of, that's, you know, a little bit incidental, but an interesting little story.
It's not reassuring that China doesn't have a monopoly on repressive software. That just makes the Orwellian threat seem worse.
Right. It means that if we're worried about the Orwellian threat, trying to put China in a box isn't going to head it off, A, and B, probably the most effective strategy would be to show the world that an actual liberal democracy doesn't put up with that repression.
It does not follow that China is not a threat, because China is the nation that's big enough to really fuck over the whole world. El Salvador isn't going to take over the world. I don't have to worry about that.
No. The counterpart to China here is this Israel company.
Israel's not going to take over the world. China.
Well, no, sell software to every would-be repressive regime, then it doesn't matter if China's doing it.
Yes, it does, because China is like one big, huge repressive regime, and that's more of a threat than a bunch of little repressive regimes. They're going to fall and rise and fall.
A threat in what sense?
The El Salvador government is not going to last for 100 years. A Chinese autocracy, totalitarian autocracy, could conceivably last for 100 years.
So what if it does? I mean, I don't want it to, but how does that hurt America?
If it manages to enslave Africa and large chunks of other Southeast Asia and a little bit of Europe, that's bad for humanity. I think it's probably also bad for the United States.
How does it manage to, quote, enslave them? How does it do that?
Well, if you're really paranoid and you think that Viktor Orban is going to have an Anschluss with China that preserves his anti-liberal regime in power, if you're totally paranoid, which I'm not supposed to be, that would be bad for Europe. Yeah. They're a member of NATO.
So what would happen that would be bad for America? Play this out. What happens? You've got this one country that has an alliance with China.
Well, I don't know.
So
we do a
happens?
Lot of trade with Europe. If half of Europe becomes authoritarian, that's bad for the United States trade. I don't know.
But why would Viktor Orban become so dependent on China if, as I just pointed out, he can get any repressive software he wants on the marketplace?
I don't know.
He doesn't need China for that.
But he has somehow felt a need to have some sort of alliance with China. At some point, if the United States is an isolated island of freedom in a world of authoritarianism, seems to me that somehow becomes a little untenable. I don't know.
Well, this reminds me so much of the Cold War. It's like, what if America is completely encircled? That should lead us to get a ton of people killed in Vietnam, because who knows?
Well, I agree.
It's just completely implausible. This is fucking crazy shit.
It's not completely implausible that we would want more of a buffer than the Atlantic Ocean, that we'd want also Europe to be a buffer. I don't know. We'd want the whole world to be inoculated against China, so China can do what it wants, but can't do it anywhere near us. Seems not crazy.
If you want to inoculate the world from the Chinese model, make our model work. Focus on that. Make our model work.
Why can't? But those of us who want our model to be more freedom, a better life, lower GDP, don't particularly want to make our model work in that way.
But historically, Mickey, wars actually recently have made our model less effective. I think Iraq was bad for the country. I think the Syrian intervention helped get Trump elected.
We're not talking about war. We're talking about whether we should have a Cold War.
What are you talking about?
We were talking about whether we have a Cold War where we suck up to authoritarian governments that happen to be near China, like India and other places. Not have a war. Just ignore human rights in those countries while we contain China. That's the argument.
But I thought you were embracing the Walter Russell Mead model.
Walter Russell Mead isn't talking about war. He's talking about sucking
up. He's talking about a Cold War, sucking up
to, I don't know what his position is on Taiwan, but he wants to suck up to authority. It's a Gene Kirkpatrick thing. We want to suck up to authoritarian regimes that are anti-China, or that could be anti-China.
If you mean send them arms and shit,
war is
a red herring.
100%
against this. I'm 100% against this.
No, he's talking about not sanctioning them and not saying nasty things about them.
I'm against sanctions letting them go to our conferences.
That's what he's talking about.
Well, wait. I mean, I thought first of all, I'm against sanctioning pretty broadly. If that's all he's saying, sure, I'd be happy. Get rid of all the sanctions. Great. I'm in heaven.
Okay, well, you're on the same page.
Well, no, we're not, because he probably wants to keep them on Venezuela and Iran and Syria and Cuba.
I don't know what he wants.
Ask him about that. Ask him about that.
We're just talking about Southeast Asia. The point is, you brought in war, and war is a red herring. Nobody's talking about having a war.
Lots of people are talking about having a war. They're talking about getting involved with Taiwan.
He isn't talking about having a war. Taiwan is I think he would say Taiwan is a difficult case.
Oh, wait. There was something else I was going to say. It was going to be devastating. But this fucking Omicron got my brain, you know?
Yeah.
Which reminds me, this parrot room is really going to
I have a what I think is a almost devastating contradiction I've caught you in from last week.
Are we going to talk about that in the parrot room?
Well, I don't think there's time for it now, and I don't think it's that devastating, but I do want to bring it up.
Okay, I want to talk about a devastating contradiction that I think I caught Robert Malone in on the Joe Rogan show. So two devastating, I'm writing this down, two devastating contradictions. A lot of people died that we haven't talked about. I think Sidney Poitier had already died when we taped last week. We just didn't talk about him. But now Bob, is it Saget or Saget, the comedian Saget?
I think it's Saget, but I'm not sure.
Terry Teachout.
I know. That's really sad.
Did you know him?
I didn't know him, but I mean, we communicated a tiny bit on Twitter, and I came to find his Twitter presence a comforting presence. I mean, he married his longtime love. She died. It was very sad. He thought contradicted the usual view of Twitter, which is it's a hell site of meanness. He said, "I don't know. I'm taking care of my dying wife, and I come to Twitter, and it's actually a respite. It's actually I enjoy being here. It's better than what I have in my real life, and I'm being nice to people." So he was a good presence on Twitter. I did not know him.
I didn't know much about him, but in anyway, I have questions about him precisely because I didn't know anything about him. I want to raise the question of whether I should file a lawsuit against Andrew Sullivan for making false and damaging statements about my content.
No, the answer is no. We've dealt with that one.
I was kidding about the lawsuit, but you know what I'm talking about.
We could talk about that. I have a...
That's my point. We can talk about
that. I have a hard to defend middle position since I'm still in suck up to Andrew mode.
I know. So many people are.
Well, he's done a lot of good things lately.
When are we going to get to the point where people suck up to us?
Never.
I was thinking my new, Omicron business model might get us there. Anyway, the Andrew thing is that's kind of entails a discussion of the trans sports issue,
right?
This Penn swimmer and so on. I do want to talk about Don't Look Up a little. The movie. I do think I have I think there's something to be said for my take on it.
We have the Ruth Barrett lawsuit against the Atlantic, which can occasion another fusillade of cheap shots against the Atlantic. We have
and Jeffrey Goldberg.
Another good Barry Weiss piece.
Is that you trolling me?
I am trolling you, but there was a good Barry Weiss piece about Hollywood.
Is it okay with you if I just write down Barry Weiss piece rather than good Barry Weiss piece? Okay.
We have two more obvious problems with the coalition of the ascendant, the worst idea of the last decade. We have perhaps an overstatement by David Remnick saying we're suspended between democracy and authoritarianism. I don't know. Are we?
We'll discuss that.
We have my dilemma with I'd like to give some money to the Salvation Army, but they seem to have gone woke. What do I do? Is there an alternative? We have Viscount Ridley on the origin of the virus.
Matt Ridley?
Yes.
Is Viscount his real title?
That's what he was called in the British press.
I don't even know what the word means. It sounds German.
We have some two Epstein developments. perhaps we're on the verge of naming some names.
This is going to be a long parrot room. I mean, remember, I may have COVID. Let's why don't we stop it here?
Okay.
Epstein. No, go ahead. I'm kidding. No such thing.
Well,
I
have some wonky things that you won't like, you know, there's a compromise proposal on the child tax credit that I don't like, of course. There's a some new evidence on rising inequality, which seems to vindicate the previously obsolete stance of my book, which was that equality is increasing throughout the entire society, not just at the top. It's not just the top 1%. The entire society is like a string of taffy being pulled. I know you're
excited
about that.
Save the metaphor for the parrot room. It's the metaphors they pay for, Mickey.
I know you're excited about that.
Anything on like pop culture or anything?
I exhausted my metaphor supply with the manatees.
That was good. That was good.
There's Maya Angelou getting a quarter. That seems...
Mickey, this is going to be like Jerry Lewis's telethon if you don't stop.
Okay. And, well, you asked for pop culture.
Maya Angelou is not pop culture. She's culture.
Well, that's the argument.
We want pop culture.
The argument is, isn't he the one who Leon Wieselter said reminded him of a cross between Ralph McEwen and Maxine Waters?
I'm laughing at the absurdity.
I think the point was that she is pop culture, not culture. That would be Leon.
For Leon, and very few things qualify as truly highbrow. You know, he probably doesn't even consider our podcast highbrow, Mickey, believe it or not.
Perhaps we're midwit.
Is his journal finally dead? I never hear about it.
No, I still get them.
How often do they come out? If that's the point, you get them, but I don't hear about it.
It's not getting more accessible to the layman. It's getting a little less. But,
okay, so that's the final thing in the parrot room is we officially, I'm typing this down, officially declare Leon Wieseltier's journal dead.
No, it's not dead. Dead. I will show in the parrot room. I will have a stack of them, which I get. And he publishes good things. Every now and then he publishes a fantastic
Leon's
piece by James
journal.
Walcott.
I'm putting dead in all caps. Dead. Anyway. Okay, but Mickey, really, we're going to start with the COVID test because I'm not kidding. I feel like shit. This could be for real, and it would be sad. I would be the last person to say untrue things in an attempt to get people to go to patreon.com/parrotroom and give us money. I would not make any false claims. I'm serious when I say I don't feel that great.
So you have the test.
We have tests in this house.
Okay.
My wife leaves nothing to chance when it comes to COVID, believe me. I had N95s before you'd ever heard of them.
N95s
so
or
K95s? Well, I...
K95.
We can discuss that in the pair. I prefer KN. The N's are like... They're just too much of a pain.
What does the K mean?
The K means you that the bands go around your ears... The end means it's the same mask, but the end means both bands go over the top of your head. So it's very hard to like take it off or like just lower it or anything like that temporarily. It's just, and plus, you know, my hair, now that my hair is kind of long, I don't want my hair messed up, right?
I always thought the K-Men, it's a cheap Korean imitation K-Men
no.
95.
No, the masks themselves, I think, are roughly identical. It's just about where the little bands go.
They seem awfully good. I've started to wear them now. They seem so much better than the alternative.
Yeah, I was wearing one in the sauna at the health club, but apparently that wasn't enough.
We don't know.
We'll find that out, folks.
Show us the test.
Show us the test.
I will. We'll
okay.
see.